Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where, as always, we offer you an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Well, if you've been following the news in Israel over the last month and a half to 2 months especially, Iran has been spoken about in many, many different ways. It's not that long ago, in the end of June, over 12 days, we had an active war, a war that built up, but it's actually been a war with the Islamic Republic since 1979. This just became the first time that there were actually Israeli military jets and people on the ground, and Iranian, not the first time, but the third time that Iranian missiles were being fired back at us, and there were dozens of casualties on this side. Here today, we're going to be talking about Iran from a much broader perspective. Sure, you can't ignore the elephant in the room. We can't not talk about the geopolitical situation. But today I want to try to get into a little bit more of the spiritual situation. And I'm very excited to have a guest who I only met briefly once in person, but whose book I read and really got engaged with. Dr. Hormuz Shariat is the author of Iran's Great Awakening. He is the president and founder of Iran Alive Ministries in Texas. Let me share a little bit about him before we get into the topic and a really engaging conversation that I'm expecting. Dr. Shariat is from a Muslim background and became a follower of Jesus in 1980 after a significant comparative study between the Bible and the Quran. He has a PhD in artificial intelligence, which I think is a completely different conversation that I'd love to have, particularly since he's probably my contemporary, and artificial intelligence is something that's in the modern world very relatively new. His PhD is from the University of Southern California and a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Bible and Theology from Jessup University. Dr. Shariat firmly believes that Iran will be the first Islamic nation to become a Christian nation. It's ready for a major transformation, he says, spiritually, socially, financially, and politically, and it will be a Christian nation as prophesied in Jeremiah 49:38. He's the author of the book I've already mentioned, Iran's Great Awakening, which I highly recommend. It's the number one source of information about what's happening in Iran today and how the Bible prophecies align with current events. That's a very significant statement, because the Bible does not prophesy about many places outside of Israel, and Iran, in fact, is one of those places. He's been broadcasting the gospel to Iran and the Middle East since 2001 via satellite, and has seen over 100,000 of Iranian Muslims come to Jesus. His satellite channel is the most watched Christian channel in Iran. 7 days a week, over 7 million daily viewers, which represents, fascinating, at 7.7% of the population. Approximately 20 million people watch it on a weekly basis. Through his media, he's developed a large underground church network in Iran as well. He also started an online school to disciple and train leaders to serve in Iran, and that currently has over 4,800 students. Dr. Shariat has been called the Billy Graham of Iran by Joel Rosenberg, the famous author and a good friend. His ministry has been featured in Christianity Today, Charisma, World Magazine, and other publications, and he's been a guest on various radio and TV stations, including CBN 700 Club, Daystar, and TBN. He's a frequent speaker at the Voice of the Martyr conference. And Dr. Shariat, I am really thrilled and honored to have you today join me on Inspiration from Zion.
It's my honor. Thank you for the invitation. And I would love to share what the Lord is doing in Iran. And I hope and I believe and I expect your audience will be shocked.
Well, I want to hear, and it's very important because Iran, we refer to it as the head of the snake or the head of the octopus. And since your younger years, when Iran became the Islamic Republic of Iran, it's become a great source of trouble and tension, not just in Iran for tens of millions of Iranians, but also in the Middle East, specifically in Israel and around the world. Let's talk first just about your personal background a little bit. You were born in Iran, grew up, became at some point a devout Muslim. I don't think that you grew up that way, but you were searching. And I'm curious if you can kind of walk us through what it was like in the Iran pre-revolution, before the Shah fell and before the Ayatollahs came in.
Well, there was freedom. Shah brought major changes to Iran. I remember being in high school, early high school, and coming out of high school. Our world had changed within a few years. The Shah had changed Iran. There was freedom, except one freedom. Political freedom was not there. So the people of Iran wanted political freedom. That's why they rose up against Shah. But the result was not only they did not gain political freedom, they lost all other freedoms. So with Shah, it was you could do anything. Christianity was open. There was churches. People could choose their religion. But after revolution came and people rose up. Now, the people were very Islamic in their hearts, maybe not outside, but in their homes, they were very religious, the people of Iran. And they were not happy with the westernization of what Shah is doing. So there was this content of, this country is becoming more like USA. Some people liked it, many didn't. But after revolution, over the last 45 years, the people of Iran have experienced Islam the real way. The clerics have ruled Iran. They have showed Iranian what Islam really is in practice. So people of Iran, after 45 years, they have experienced Islam and they have come to conclusion, Islam is not our solution. Actually, it's a root of our problems and we need to get rid of it. Islam has experienced its greatest defeat in its history in Iran today. Majority of Iranians have rejected Islam and they're looking at Eastern religion, New Age, and especially Christianity.
Excellent. So that's a great setup for where I wanted to go. I'm curious, you were sharing just before we started recording that you and your wife became devout Muslims. And shortly afterward, when you left and you were coming to America to study, you did a comparative study between the Quran and the Bible, and you realized that, in fact, Islam was not the answer, but it was Christianity. Can you share a little bit about that? And I'm curious, specifically, the juxtaposition of coming from Islam and then realizing that the truth was not there, but in Christianity.
Of course, you know, as you shared, I wanted to become a good Muslim because at that time, every Iranian were saying, hey, Islam is going to take over the world. Look, we defeated superpower USA. We defeated Shah. And God is with us. We're going to take over the world. So that was the hype of those days. And that's what caused me as a Muslim. I said, I'm not really serious Muslim. I need to become serious in my faith and serve Islam. But I said, hey, when I was a teenager, I was a good Muslim, but it didn't really satisfy my soul. But maybe I was too young. So let me study Quran because I want to dedicate my life to serving Islam. So I studied Quran one more time, even though I knew a lot, but unbiased. I tried to be unbiased, objectively. But when I finished Quran, I said, who is God? Where is he? there are some commandments that many of them are violent. Okay, I accept that. If God wants me to kill, I will. But it hasn't satisfied my soul. Maybe there is, this is not for me. But what is? Being an intellectual, I thought all religions are the same. If they say God has written other books like Bible, I'm open-minded. I'm going to read it. All religions, I'm not going to find anything new. It's all the same. But when I studied the Bible, expecting not to find anything new, especially Sermon on the Mount, who is this Jesus? That's not in Bible. What Jesus teaches is not in Quran. It's in the Bible, but not in Quran. So Jesus talks about forgiveness, love your enemies, all that. So I went through a few months of struggle. Which one is true? I thought all religions are the same. Now I cannot put these together. Both cannot be true. Wow. Quran and the Bible both cannot be true. Allah is not the same as Jehovah, if you really study it. So after a few months of struggle, I went to a church in downtown Los Angeles. That's where I heard the simple message of the gospel that even a child can understand. You don't need to have PhD to understand it. It was simple. And that simple message was so powerful, changed my life, healed my marriage. We're at the verge of divorce, healed my marriage. So I got excited, Jonathan. I said, this simple message is powerful. I'm selfish if I don't share it with others. So I started sharing with others, and many people came to Christ.
And when you started sharing with others, if I remember correctly, your early ministry was also among expatriate Iranians, and you had a church, a home church, if I remember correctly, of other Iranians. And how did that get received? I must imagine that when you're indoctrinated with Islam, it has to be an all or nothing, and you experience the all. But it's got to be there's got to be an element of conflict in there, no? To realize that everything you were taught up until then is a lie.
I came to that conclusion, and especially when you receive Christ, you feel the presence of God, you feel the Holy Spirit, you read the Bible, you enter a new beautiful world when you believe in Jesus. It's not just, I believe in this set of facts, now I believe in this set of facts. Jesus says you're going to be born again. There is a transformation from within, and that astonished me. Getting up, something is happening in my heart. I have peace, I have joy I've never tried to have. And so this faith is not just a set of beliefs. It has power to transform people, to heal marriages, and transform societies. That's why I got excited.
It's amazing that you keep setting up my next questions, because when you talk about transforming societies, so I wanted to ask you now, what's the state of the church in Iran today? People are saying that the largest number of people anywhere are coming to Jesus in Iran, that there are millions of people, but it's not really documented, or is it? Tell us about that.
Well, Iran has the fastest growing evangelical population in the world. The rate of growth, the numbers, of course, in Russia in China, you get big numbers. So the rate, the number of people coming to Christ is the number one, according to Operation World Manual. So this is the situation. People are sick and tired of Islam. They're looking around. They receive our signal. As you may know, we do 24/7 satellite broadcast. These are free signal going over the heads of the mullahs into people's homes. The signal comes from the sky. The government cannot stop it. So we go in the living room of people in the privacy. I tell them about Jesus, and they're so open. Jonathan, amazing openness among the people of Iran. Did you know they love Christianity? They love Jesus. They respect Christians and Jesus more than Islam and Muhammad and Allah. Right now, you say, let me share a story. One of our leaders, underground church, he had such a fast growth of number of underground churches he was planting. Just going from one convert to tens and then many, many underground churches. So I asked him, hey, tell me your secret. How come your church, underground church network, is growing so fast? What do you do? He said, that's easy, because the people of Iran are so open to the message of the gospel. They're so positive about Christ and Christianity. And this is what he said. He said, this is the way I evangelize. Whenever I'm invited to any dinner party, any birthday party, any gathering, I say yes. When I go there, all I do is I get up, I say, hey guys, I'm a Christian. And I sit down. And many who are interested, they gather around me, wow. They ask questions, and I lead every party, every gathering, I lead several people to Christ. That's how I grow my church.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace, with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com. But that's very dangerous there, isn't it? It's not, it's the largest, the fastest growing church, but it's also maybe with China as the exception, because it's so populous, also the largest underground church. It's very dangerous to be a Christian in Iran.
Yes, it is. And the government is very alarmed. And they want to stop Christianity. They know Christianity is growing that fast, and they want to stop it, that they cannot kill millions, as you shared. So they have this policy or this strategy of fear and intimidation. What they're doing right now is to arrest a few Christians, but publicize and put fear in the heart of the rest of Christians. For example, just a few weeks ago, they arrested several Christians. One of them was a mother with a baby, just had a baby, a young mother. And they decided to put her in jail for 17 years.
Wow.
You know what her crime was?
I can guess, but go ahead.
Attending a house church.
Oh, just that's attending, all. Not even converting.
Attending. No. Wow. That's the fearful the government of Iran is. Sometimes I think the government of Iran believes in the power of church more than we Christians do. They're so afraid when Christians gather together, wow. Even in a house.
That's a great statement. The government of Iran is more, what did you say, afraid of the power of the church. That's very powerful.
Yes. And it is. Church is powerful. We have the most powerful message, life-changing, transformational message of Jesus. And Iran, as you mentioned, we know the end result. Iran will be transformed and will be a Christian nation according to God's promise in Jeremiah 49:38. You know, Jonathan, I used to say, Iran will be a Christian nation. Iran will be a Christian nation. And people would say, are you crazy? Just Google it. It's 98% Muslim. I said, no, Iran is no longer a Muslim nation. And they said, where did you get that idea? I said, I stole the idea that Iran will be a Christian nation. That's not my idea. Where did you steal it from? I stole it from the Lord in Jeremiah 49:38. That's his idea. He says he will set his throne there. And it will happen. and we are fast moving in that direction. It's a possible dream even within one generation that Iran will be mostly Christians.
Amazing. How do you count? This is a practical question. I know people, and I believe it. It makes sense from every intellectual reason that that's the fastest growing church. But how does one track? How do you know if it's 100,000 people who have come to faith, or 500,000, or 1 million, or 10 million? How does one know that?
Great question. I have two answers. One is there was a survey 2 or 3 years ago by two university professors in Sweden. They went online and asked the people of Iran, what do you believe? What do you believe? And they published the result. If you search internet, you will find it. So this is solid research. 50,000 people asking, this is solid research. So less than one third of Iranians said we are Muslims, 30 to some. So that's solid. And according to him, one third said we don't believe in Islam, or we believe in Islam. Another third said God is not important to us, or there is no God. Another, the last one third were looking all over the place. And they were looking at Eastern religion, New Age, and Christianity. According to that research, they gave a number of 1.5 million, even though it's very conservative. Because you ask an Iranian, are you a Christian? Even if they are, many said, no, I'm a Muslim. They want to be put in danger. So a very conservative number is 1.5 million. The second reason I want to share, this is a bit funny, because I give the number of 2 to 3 million Muslim background believers in Iran, in the West, when I speak at churches and conferences. And sometimes they say, hey, aren't you exaggerating? I said 3 million, 2 million. And I said, I don't have a solid except that 1.5 million. But the funny thing, Jonathan, is this. I give the same number to our underground church leaders. I tell them, hey, I'm saying there are 2 to 3 million Muslim background believers. What do you think? You know what they say? Our leaders, underground church leaders, hey, Pastor Hormoz, why are you downplaying what God is doing in Iran? There are more. And they give me examples. They say we go on streets to tell people about Jesus. Many of them are already Christians. Wow. We sit in a taxi. One of them was saying, I sat in a taxi and I wanted to share the gospel with the taxi driver. And the taxi, before I start telling him about Christ, he told me about Jesus. He was witnessing to me. And I told him, hey, aren't you afraid I might, you just shared that with all your passengers? He said, yes, I do. I said, aren't you afraid you will be arrested? What if I was a government agent? I will arrest you. He said, I have been arrested. So what? Yeah, I share gospel with my passengers and I've been arrested a couple of times. So tell me what happened when you were arrested. He said, when they arrest me, I tell them this. Hey, that's not my fault. Last year, I had cancer and I was dying. Jesus appeared to me and he healed me. And have no cancer. It's not my fault that Jesus appeared to me and healed me. If you have any problem, go talk to him. All I'm telling people that this is what happened to in my life. So our underground church leaders are saying the numbers are much higher. We don't know exactly, but when Iran opens up, when the government falls down, I believe at Iran Alive, with the help of our friends, we can plant hundreds and thousands of churches within a couple of months in many, many cities.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And it's funny because your Joel is a great guy, and he's ascribed the title of the Billy Graham of Iran to you. When I went through the Billy Graham library, I don't know if it was the first time or the second time, I realized how well placed he was when the Soviet Union fell. And similarly, right, less tyranny, less threats to Christians in the Soviet Union than Iran, but similar societies that have been beaten down for so long with false ideologies And people have to, if they're looking for truth, it will stare them in the face. I do believe that, and I pray for it. So actually, let me ask you another question. When that happens, next week, God willing, the government falls and Iran somehow becomes an open society again, are you on the first, second, or third plane to Iran to help grow the ministry, or are you relying on the people who were there?
Oh, definitely. Not only I, we have a team that are ready to go. Not everybody can go. Some of them have roots here and families, but there are some who call to go back. But the main force is not the people outside. God knows. I'm sure we have several hundred thousand, if not millions, of Iranian Christians who are connected to ours. That's a guess, but there is one number. We have the names of over 110,000 Muslims background who have contacted us, prayed to receive Christ. So we know at least 100,000 people. We have a church of 100,000 people. If we just organize them, gather them, that by itself will be thousands of churches.
Sure. And I'm guessing that after 46 and a half years of this revolution, Islamic revolution, and the tremendous tyranny that has come as a result of it, not too many people are running to be more faithful Muslims.
No, Islam is gone in Iran, and people of Iran are done with Islam. There's a good, small segment that follow it. The government, even the government officials, I've talked to some of them. Some of the government officials have come to Christ, by the way, because
very interesting.
Television signal goes to every home. So, and it brings results. So I've, over the years, I've had some government officials, some clerics have come to Christ through our satellite television. And they are telling me this, that majority of those in power, they don't really believe in Islam. They're there for the power and for the money.
Very interesting. Okay. God willing, we will have that opportunity soon. Let's jump to talk a little bit about Israel and the Jewish people. When you were growing up, Iran was an open society. You said it very well. It was very free, except for politically. Iran had a population, if I'm not mistaken, of 120,000 Jews, small percent out of the whole country, but they lived comfortably. They were not persecuted and largely protected by the Shah. Obviously, that changed in 1979. And I'm curious your perspective on two things. One, yourself growing up, if you had any interaction with Jewish people there before the revolution and what that was like. And second, most of Iran today was born since the revolution. And I'm curious what the perspective is of average Iranians vis-a-vis Israel and the Jewish people.
Yes, when I was growing up, of course, I owe a lot of my research passion to my mother. She was an educator. My father was an educator. And they taught me not to be prejudiced against anybody. So in high school, I had Jewish friends. At that time, I didn't know why they're being attracted to me. Why are they coming to me to be friends? Now I realize because the rest of the class, they were prejudiced. They were putting them down. They were rude to them. But so I had Jewish friends in high school and university in Iran. Talking about what's happening now is that... First, let me explain this. The hatred that the government of Iran has. Let's separate the government and the people. Let's start from there. The government is not the same as people. Totally, totally different. When the government of Iran says death to Israel, death to Israel, the people of Iran are saying, why? They haven't done anything to us. You are the ones who have ruined our lives. You are our enemies, not them. So there is a growing love. I'm talking about love and admiration, Jonathan. It's not just tolerance. We don't want to do anything with the Jewish people, with Israel. There is a growing love and admiration for Israel and the Jews in Iran. many of Iranians are saying, if Shah was there, we could have been like Israel, free,
true,
powerful, wealthy, strong. Why not? Why couldn't we become just like Israel? So the people of Iran admire Israel. And one point I have to make, the hatred towards the Jews is an imported hatred. As you know, from Cyrus time and on, Jews lived in Iran. There was never a Holocaust. And there was one time, a book of Esther, you see, almost there was a Holocaust. But just remember, Haman was not Iranian. He was an anti-Jew. He came from that area and was an Amalekite. So over the years, Jews were accepted in Iran. And so when Islam attacked Iran, the hatred of Jews, which is a supernatural, spiritual hatred, and I believe the root is between Isaac and Ishmael. I mean, that goes back there. So the people of Iran, naturally, they do not hate Jews. It was imported with Islam. And as Islam is being defeated in Iran, the hatred towards the Jews is also gone, is being gone. Nice.
That's a very clear statement, and it's encouraging. So let's move to current events. In the middle of June, June 13th, we were awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning here with air raid sirens, which was very interesting. What Israel did, it was a preemptive thing because our planes were on the way or in the process of attacking in Iran at that time, and we expected a massive response, which at that moment didn't happen. And nobody really understood what was going on. And then we continued. And this war went on for 12 days. Lots of people were killed in the Iranian leadership and IRGC and nuclear sites and nuclear leaders. What went through your mind? It was, I suppose, late afternoon, mid-afternoon on the 12th. Of June when this was all happening. I don't know where you were, but what was going through your mind when this began and then as the war progressed?
Well, I'm in touch with the people of Iran, and what I saw, my heart is their heart, and I feel how they feel. So my heart as they was this, is this the end of the Islamic regime or not? We hope it is. So when Israel attacked Iran, let me share this with you. For the last almost a year, the people of Iran have been asking Israel and Netanyahu, hey, Netanyahu, would you do this to us? You know, we know you can do it. You did it in Hamas, and you did it to Hezbollah. You pinpoint accuracy. You killed their leaders. Now, would you do that favor to us? Would you come and kill our leaders just like that and set us free? Isn't that a strange that a people would ask another nation, would you attack us? That just shows the depth of desperation. Depth of desperation and hopelessness. So when the war started, majority of Iranian people were happy. They were hopeful. They suddenly got a hope. When there was a negotiation on the other side, before this war, you know, there was a negotiation between the U.S. and Iran. You know what people of Iran were thinking? No, please, Trump, don't do that. No negotiation, because if you negotiate with them, you will help them stay longer. No negotiation. Hey, Uncle Trump, by the way, they love Trump and they call him Uncle Trump because they think he's their savior.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
He's not, but they think so. They say, hey, would you, Uncle Trump, come and save us? Israel, come and save us. But on the other hand, when the ceasefire happened, you know what people of Iran felt?
Yeah.
They felt depressed and hopeless. They did not like that. They said, we wanted the war to bring down the government. Now this, the war has come and gone, and there's a ceasefire, but the government's still there. So, you know, the Bible says the hope deferred makes the heart sick. That's exactly where the people of Iran are today. They have deferred hope. They're kind of depression, hopelessness right now among Iranians. With the war, they had a little glimmer of hope that, hey, maybe this is the time we will set free, but it didn't happen. Now there's ceasefire and there's possible negotiations, and people of Iran are depressed. Said, no, we don't want this government for four or more years. So, but if the war happens, they may welcome it, even though the war is not beautiful. It's ugly. The people of Iran paid a price for that war. You know what they were saying? Said, I talked to them and they were saying, yes, there was a price to pay for that 12-day war, and we are ready to pay more price. But just think about it. If the government stays, we are paying the price. They're executing 3 people a day,
right,
on the average. Right. They've killed our loved ones. They've killed our children. If they stay, they will continue to kill. So what if we just, 100, 200 of us get killed, but the government changes? They think it's a good deal, even though a death of one person is painful.
Of course it is. But unfortunately, sometimes there's a huge price to pay for freedom. And it's not just the 12-day war, but Iranians have suffered for 46 years. Tens of thousands have been killed, disappeared, arrested, tortured. It's and maybe more. Maybe it's more than tens of thousands.
They do this math. This is not from me. That people of Iran, they say, hey, so easily they killed the top commanders, Revolutionary Guard commanders, in one day to kill all of them. They were happy to hear that, because they were the killers of their loved ones. They were the killers of their children for the last few years. So they were happy to see them killed. But this is the logic there after that. They said, if we wanted just to slap one of these commanders, we probably had to pay 10,000 people their lives.
Wow.
To be able to just slap one of them. And here, maybe 50, 60, 70 people died, and many of them were killed. They say that's a good deal.
Wow, that's very enlightening. I want to talk about what the future will be from your perspective. We don't know. We can pray. But before we do, I want to go back. I've been going all over the place, back to 1978 and 79. In your book, and before we started recording, you speak about how you were one of the protesters. You were out there yelling death to America on the streets, and with your wife, who was an American. And I'm curious, your story is different, but maybe you can narrate both on your behalf as well as the people of Iran. It's now nearly 50 years. What drove that fervor to want the Shah out, and then believe that maybe they weren't calling it the Islamic Revolution initially, but to believe that that was going to be a good thing? And then how are you and people who were involved in that 46 years ago feeling? What would you have done differently? Or was that the right thing to do?
many people who participated in that revolution, my age, they had to apologize to the next generation. We are sorry we did that to you. And we didn't know. There was no internet. There was no social media. We were deceived by the promises of Khamenei, the Ayatollah. So definitely this could not happen if there was a good communication. And there was a big mistake. Now, being a part of it, it's like you live in a society where it's the change, the positive change, so fast, and it becomes normal. And you don't appreciate unthankfulness. There was an unthankfulness. They didn't realize this country, Iran, 20 years back, it was nothing. It was Pahlavi. It was the Shah and his father who built up the country, but they were used to that. By the way, that's what I see in America also. There are many Americans, I don't say all of them, but many of them just take the America for granted.
Yes.
They protest, they burn the U.S. flags and the death to America in American universities, some of them. So it's exact the same spirit. Do not value what you already have. And so the university students, they wanted more political freedom, and they did not value the future that was awaiting them and what Shah had done. Now, for the new generation, this is funny. The new generation that were born after Islamic Revolution, these are young people in their 20s, the 30s, some in 40s. They consider the late Shah as a national hero.
They do. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. What was Khamenei? You said something very interesting. You said that you were deceived by the promises of Khamenei. What were the promises? What was he saying that he was going to do? I assume it wasn't saying we're going to impose radical Islam and you're all going to be devout Shiites.
Oh, he never said that. He lied so many times. He said there will be no forced covering hijab. Women will be free. We don't have to wear that. There will be political freedom. The clerics, we are not called to run the government. We are going to go to just the cities and be clerics. So many, many promises. Another promise, Iran has so much oil income that I promise to deliver the profit of selling oil to your door.
Wow.
So he promised the electricity will be free. Everything will be free. You will have houses because we have enough money to build you houses. And this Shah hasn't done that. So a lot of fake promises. And later, once he got in power, he had an interview with a Western lady journalist. And you can find that clip. She brought this up. She said, hey, when you were not in power, you said this, you said that, you promised this, you promised that. And you did totally the opposite. You took over the government and you killed your opponents. Why did you do that? You know what he said? He said, I deceived them, which is the word. Yeah. The word he uses, khud'a, is Islamic, which is Allah wants his followers to do that. To lie for the sake of Islam is commanded in Islam. So he said, he wasn't sorry. He said, yeah, I use Islam deception that's in Quran. I use that method.
Wow. What would you have done differently now? The Hormoz Shariat now, who's past 60, I assume, as compared to the young man who was protesting the Shah?
What was your question?
What would you have done differently now? If you could speak to yourself 47 years ago.
I don't know. It was a spirit, deceptive spirit everywhere at that time. Intellectuals especially, they were in it. Communist party, underground communist party, they united with Islamists. There was an amazing deception that, okay, I don't believe in God, but I'm going to support Khamenei. for the change, for the good. He promised it's going to be heaven on earth, of course. And Islam is a religion of peace, which is not a religion of equality, which is not, there is so much violence and injustice. But I don't know what, being in that environment, I don't know what you could have done differently. There is one thing that people bring up. One thing people are saying, this is younger generation. When people like us say, if you were there, you would probably have done the same thing. They bring up one thing. Why didn't you read the dissertation of Khamenei? Why didn't you read his book? He had written a book. And you didn't read it, and you did a revolution. Because when you read Khomeini's book, you see all this in his book.
Wow. Okay. That's a great answer. And so in a sense, you allowed yourselves to be deceived without doing the due diligence. Yeah. It's the what's the phrase in English? The grass is always greener on the other side. Look at something. Okay. So let's look forward now. We were just speaking also before beginning the formal conversation about the conference that took place in Germany recently with Reza Pahlavi. I think, if I understand correctly, he convened it, and there were hundreds of Iranians in exile. He obviously has some sort of strategy, even though he says he doesn't want to be the leader of Iran. But I'm curious, first of all, I like to talk about what the future of Iran looks like, but if, as I said before, if the government were to fall tomorrow, who is in fact the best placed person to lead Iran for the future or in the short term?
Well, the Shahzadeh, which is the prince, has the greatest chance, but he doesn't have the majority. He has good followers. There were many factions in Iran, and may I say, unfortunately, this is what I see. I don't like it, but this is what's going to happen. When the government of Iran collapses, there will be infighting. There is no one person in power. They're going to be ugly. The people, I tell people on our channel, I said, you need to change. You want to change the government. First, you need to change. Our society needs to change. If we and I don't change and the government changes, it's going to be worse. Why? Because right now, the government is killing the people, then the people will be killing the people. So we need to change. And who brings that change? Only Jesus Christ can bring that deep change in a person's life and in a society.
So I actually want to come back to that point in just a moment, but I think I know the answer, but I'd like you to say it. Why do you think that there will be this infighting and people killing people? Why is that why do you think that?
You see, Jonathan, democracy is a nice word, and people of Iran love that word. Republic, democracy, people in power. But they don't realize the base for democracy is a value system in a society. And that value system is biblical value system. It's in the Bible when one person is valued, their life, the vote, the mindset of one person is valued. That's not Middle East. That's not Islam. So the value system, the social structure, and is not there for democracy to survive. On the contrary, in fighting, competition, the culture that says, if you're not my friend, you're my enemy. And that's not just a speculation. Think about it. 3 years ago, there was this woman life freedom uprising in Iran.
Exactly.
And there were many people outside Iran. They call them opposition groups. And they got together. Everybody was happy. Hey, these opposition groups, the Shah, we love him. Oh, that person has some followers. That person has some followers. Oh, they're having a conference. They're getting together. Oh, there is a hope. If they unite, we may bring this government down. They got together. After a few sessions, you know what happened? They were talking against each other. They were competing. They were putting each other down. So the teamwork and becoming united is very distant in Iran for different groups to become one. There, the culture is not there. That's why if the government falls, unfortunately, we're going to see factions and violence among people to take over the power.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
And Reza Pahlavi, come back and put off the violence and begin to restore. It's actually not a fair word because Iran never really had democracy, but can he change the society? Can he restore Iran to the potential that it had?
Yeah, he is the most popular, and his ideas are very logical and Western and pro-freedom. But unfortunately, he doesn't have the majority. He is number one in terms of followers, but not the majority.
But nobody has a majority. You're saying he would...
No.
If there were a vote, he would get the most votes, but he wouldn't have a majority, which is also a very democratic principle that the majority rules, and he would have to create a coalition. So actually, a coalition, or formally or informally. But then that leads me to another question. And you were talking, I didn't know about the divisiveness 3 years ago, but I do know that there are a lot of people and groups who are part of a informal or formal opposition, reformists from all kinds of political backgrounds, and some of them are Islamists and I would label terrorists, and I think others do as well. MEK, and I'm not sure, some are leftists, and there are many different backgrounds. Can you create a society by bringing them in together? Or, as you were saying earlier from a different perspective, do you need to just defeat them? Maybe a defeat of these ideologies is what's necessary before we can have a actually truly free Iran. What do you think?
My message to the people of Iran, and I totally believe it, until we are not changed, individuals are not changed, there's no future for Iran. Nothing will work. Nothing will work. Nothing except a dictatorship. Another dictatorship is probably, logically, I'm not promoting it. I'm not saying it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But logically, that might be the best thing that can happen to Iran, that a benevolent dictator will rise up. That's probably is the best for where Iran is now, until the Iranians change their culture, their heart. Right now, anybody who rise up, the rest of the people gang up to destroy him. That's what it is right now. Yeah. They don't want anybody to rise up. But if... if there was a dictator, and he is qualified, and some people say he wants to be a dictator, and others respond, why not? We need a good dictator. Those who are with him, actually, many of them believe he should be a dictator, but a good dictator, just like his grandfather. His grandfather built up Iran and was a dictator. By force, he built up Iran.
But they just didn't have political freedom.
No.
Okay. Which, but you're right. And culturally, it might, Iran might not yet be ready for an American or an Israeli democracy. Not yet, hopefully. I like to ask you to put two hats on for this question. You had a minor role, right? You were out in the streets protesting, and there were, I suppose, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people doing that at the time, amid the fervor. But then there were the people who were part of the regime, the ones who committed the crimes, who executed all of the opposition, who have been committing brutalities, unspeakable brutalities against Iranians for more than four decades. We've heard in the news here a lot that in order for the one factor, in order for the government, the regime to fall, is that there need to be enough high level defections. It's hard to imagine the government simply falling and a vacuum being created without people who have some sense of how things work. But if that happens and there are defections, necessarily there will be people who are defecting to save themselves, and who are horrific criminals. As an Iranian who wishes well for the future of the country, I'm wondering what you would do with those people. And yet, as a Christian, I'm wondering what you would do with those people. And are those in conflict?
Well, a fair trial. That's what. People like the prince is promising that we're going to have fair trial. We're not going to go out and kill all clerics because people are angry, they're hurt, they're revengeful. That's what leaders like Prince want. But reality, if the regime falls, many of them will flee. Many of them are ready to flee. They have sent their families outside. They've sent money outside. So in a matter of less than a week, the government of Iran will fall by hundreds of thousands of people at the top fleeing. But then we will see, unfortunately, the people of Iran are so angry. They're so revengeful right now. Any of these clerics that stay inside Iran, they can't afford to run, they will be executed.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying. I've heard that from another very good friend, Marzi Amirizadeh, who, after becoming a Christian, was arrested and sentenced to death and spent 9 months in prison. Thank God she's free and living in America. And she and I are partnering on a fabulous project to bring Christians to Harvest Olives here called Root and Branch. So, but she also says that it's almost inevitable, and maybe it's necessary. Maybe people need to get that out of their systems before. Okay, well, we'll see. We need to first pray that the government and the regime will fall, and then that it will be for good. Let me ask you one last thing, second to last thing. You and I connected. We met in person for the first time back in March, in the spring, at the NRB convention. And then you participated in a meeting that I organized under the banner of Solution for Peace in Gaza, the program that we've been promoting, and people can follow it at solutionforpeaceingaza.com. And you were very enthusiastic, and you've already addressed, I think, the direction, and you and I haven't really spoken since then, other than a few text messages. I'm wondering, what for you, if we're looking at the conflict here, the Hamas-backed, the Islamic regime-backed Hamas that's created such disaster and devastation and suffering here, why is a Christian solution for Gaza the right answer?
The Christian faith is the only faith that is both logical, it's very fair. You love your enemies. I mean, you love one another. You value a life. A serving spirit that I need to serve other people. So a Christian culture will bless any nation. If Christians really live as a Christians, they will be a blessing no matter where they go. So on the other hand, when you look at Islam and there is a spirit, look at the spiritual side of it, the spirit of Allah, spirit of Islam, the hatred and violence. That's why I say the negotiations sounds very good. Yeah, let's talk. Why not? You know, let's both live at the same, in peace together. It all sounds very good. But when you look at the spiritual level of this, you will see that this is not going to work, because it's not a matter of two people talking and logically talking about a solution. It's a spiritual battle. The spirit of Antichrist, the spirit of Islam, wants to destroy the Jews from the beginning, no matter what. So that spirit is at work. How can you negotiate with that spirit? So I don't think that any negotiation, any plan of that making the Palestine stay as is with Hamas, I don't think it will work. I think having a solution, what Trump is doing might work, you know, turning that land to a very commercial land and center of activities and tourism and production, that might work. But how can we get there?
But that doesn't change the spirit. That changes the real estate. And part of the whole conversation of solution for peace in Gaza, which is, you know, if we look out the window that's right behind me here, 40 miles, I think it's so close. And my son, I mentioned to you before we started recording, my son is going back into reserves next month. And my big fear, it's not just my son who's about to become a father, but my big fear is that my grandchildren, my 6-year-old, almost 7-year-old grandson, in 13 years, will be wearing a green uniform defending the state and people of Israel. And without a change of heart in Gaza, he will confront jihadi peers who are still trying to kill him and all of us. And as you were answering the question, I almost realized I didn't need to ask the question because you answered it at the beginning. And the beginning was your own spiritual journey, realizing that there can't be two truths. The Quran is a lie. The Bible is not. And that's, I think, the piece that people in Gaza, under Hamas specifically, need to understand, that transformation.
That's right. And it's not very hard to come to that conclusion. The Bible says Satan does what? Lie. And then he comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Look at Islam doing all of that.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward. I don't know which will happen first. The opportunity for me to visit you in your ministry headquarters in Tehran, or for you to come and do a missions trip in Gaza. But I'll pray for the opportunity to do one or both of those alongside with you. Let me just ask as we conclude, I like to give my guests so the last word. We've covered a lot of things here, and we could go on for another couple of hours. You are fascinating. You're so articulate. You're the spirit. Your faith just boils out, and I admire that so much, and I'm grateful for this. What have we not discussed? What else would you like to share on any of these topics that we've touched upon or anything else?
One thing I would like to share, I know your audience may be both Jews and Christians, and the best thing the Jews can do to defend themselves is to share the gospel with the Muslims. I mean, inviting my Jewish friends, in addition to Christian friends, would you help us share the gospel with Iranians? Why? Because it's only the gospel of Jesus Christ that will turn your enemies to be your friends. Muslims who come to Christ, they used to be enemies, and now they've become the friends of Israel. Do I have time to just share a story and finish with that?
I'm not cutting you off. I'm fascinated.
Well, let me finish with this story of how Jesus changes the enemies of the Jews to be their friends. There was this guy, he lives in Germany, but he said when he was younger in Iran, he signed up for the army, for the Revolutionary Guard, whose job was to kill, assassinate the Jews anywhere in the world. So he said, I hated the Jews so much. I voluntarily signed up. I said, equip me. I want to do that. And he was a part of that unit. But later, he had to come to outside Iran, and he lived in Germany, and he still hated the Jews. Then he had, in his early 40s, he had this sickness, and he went to coma. He was in coma in a hospital for about 40 days. That's what he told me. And he said, I was there 40 days, and they saw I'm not coming back to life. They arranged for my funeral. But then I woke up after 40 days. I woke up and I told them, hey, when I was in coma, I saw Jesus. I have seen Jesus. And he told me, you know, he said, you know what I saw in my dream when I was in coma? I was in a room with all the clerics, Iranian leaders, the Islamic leaders of Iran. They were all in that room. And they were all crying. They were all crying, wailing. I said, why are you crying? You're my heroes. And they said, we were wrong. We were wrong. What? You were wrong? Who is right? And they all pointed outward, upward. And I looked up there and I saw Jesus on a throne. And when my eyes met with Jesus, he just did like that with his finger. And I flew before Jesus, and he said, I'm sending you back, and I want to give you a mission. Your mission is to share the gospel with the Jews. Love the Jews, and go share the gospel with the Jews. So he comes back to life, and the first thing he says, get me a pastor, get me a Bible. I saw Jesus. I want to become a Christian. And since then, he witnesses to the Jews. Now he can't go to, because of the war, he stopped it. But he works and he saves money. And every year, every other year, he goes to Jerusalem. He shares the gospel with the Jews. He says, that's my passion. I ask him, when you go to Jerusalem, what do you tell the Jews there? And what's your way of witnessing, sharing the gospel? And this is what he said. He said, when I go there, I share my testimony. And that's how I was a hater of Jews, that I wanted to kill them. Now I love you. Because of Jesus Christ. And then he said, I tell him, hey, you don't need all these missiles to defend you. You need Jesus to defend you. Because these missiles may stop your enemies, but what Jesus do is to change your enemies to become your friends. Why don't you let Jesus into your life? He is your best friend, and he can not only defend you, he can change the heart of your enemies.
Well, we're going to disagree on witnessing to the Jews, but I agree 1,000% with you on the notion that we should be partners. And I've said this on many interviews that I've given and a speech I gave recently with a group of French Christians who were visiting here at my home. I believe my vision for the world, well, that we'll still be a small people. 10, well, not 10, we're almost 15 million now, 20, 30 million people, Jews in the world, and everyone else should be a Christian because we're the only people who have a relationship with the Creator, and the Jews and Christians need to have that positive relationship. But I'm grateful that you shared that. I subscribe completely. I'm an Orthodox Israeli Jew, but I subscribe to the idea of sharing the gospel with Muslims specifically. Because that's, I think, where the biggest change of heart needs to happen. And we'll see the biggest transformation in the world as a result.
As Christians, we believe in your Messiah. Your Messiah has changed our lives.
Well, and we're grateful for the relationship, the support. And this is a life, for me, it's a lifetime calling of building bridges and creating understanding. Dr. Hormuz Shariat, I am so blessed, grateful. What a lovely conversation. I look forward to seeing you in person in a few weeks when I'm visiting. And may this continue, and may we have the opportunity to celebrate the success of your ministry in Iran in person very shortly. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you, Jonathan. You're doing a great work.
Thank you so much. As we always wrap up our conversations, to encourage you to share the link for this program, to comment, to underscore how important it is, we have a program called From Jonathan's Bookshelf. All we ask that you do is like, comment, or share the link to this program. And once a month, we pick a person at random to receive a free copy of a special book. Maybe we can impose, when I'm visiting, you'll give me an extra copy of Iran's Great Awakening, and we'll also share one of those as a motivation for people this month as well. But we've been giving out copies of our stunning book, Israel the Miracle, in which Joel Rosenberg, who we spoke about earlier, has one of the most powerful essays. It's a $75 value, and you can get your copy for free just by liking, commenting, or sharing the link to this program. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, please pop in and say thank you to them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to our friends, the Coyne family, as well, for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and building bridges. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion or your favorite Iranian evangelist, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue and invite you to send any questions as well, especially questions about traditional Judaism, for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here, where you'll hear more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.